You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis, outside, out of the studio, in the heat. It has been so hot in Southern California just the past few days. Hopefully that heat will break. It is that time of the year when you're probably also being bombarded, ironically, by pumpkin spice and sweater weather as well. Well, if you've lived here long enough, you might remember a time when late September didn't always feel this way, at least not quite this hot. And just in the past few years, the air that we're breathing in Los Angeles is different. And I'm not just talking about heat. I'm also talking about humidity. Maybe you've noticed that the humidity levels are up. Maybe you've noticed that there's not quite as much marine layer as there used to be. Or air pollution has changed. Well, some of those changes are easier to see than others, which is why KCRW's Kaylee Wells brought me here to this intersection. It's like a covert operation. I'm meeting Kaylee here to talk about the air in Los Angeles.
Well, we got to be outside if we're going to talk about the air, right?
We have to, and here we are. Now, we're standing next to an apartment complex, by the way, yet another apartment complex going up in Santa Monica.
Right, because when we talk about climate change from the comfort of our temperature-controlled rooms, it doesn't quite feel the same way. So it makes it harder to actually see and feel what's different. So I wanted to start with the most obvious change, which is temperature.
Temperature, and here we are at the intersection, where are we? Lincoln Boulevard and Colorado Avenue, right? We're next to the Expo line. We're seeing it go back and forth. We see a lot of cars going back and forth. It's a busy time of the day, and it's hot.
Exactly.
It is searingly hot.
I know.
Even in Santa Monica.
I know. It's so bad. We're actually outside of this new apartment complex. It's been under construction for a few years. It's actually about to open in a couple months. And this area right here, used to actually have about a dozen mature trees that provided shade. And this apartment building is part of the reason that LA is hotter than it used to be.
This used to be a Denny's, by the way. There was a Denny's on this parking lot.
I admittedly didn't know
that. A long time, and it was catty corner to a Norm's here. But now, because we've got the Expo line over here, we've got two apartment buildings that are here. We are picking on this apartment building, Kaylee, with all the badly needed housing, right? Not only in Santa Monica, but all over Greater LA, because it replaced, as you said, some trees.
Exactly. So this is an example of the urban heat island effect, which means asphalt and concrete is sucking up sunlight and radiating the heat back out through the evening. So the changes aren't as big here in Santa Monica. It's been pretty urban here for a while, but places like Santa Clarita, for example, 50 years ago, that was a small rural community, and now it's one of the biggest cities in LA County. So that comes with a lot more pavement and buildings sucking up heat. That's what UCLA urban planning and geography professor Kelly Tuscan is tasked with studying.
The reason that population growth in the United States contributes to temperatures rising has to do with urban sprawl and the way that we develop. So if we just keep replacing more and more open space with impervious stuff, we're going to keep increasing sort of the geographic extent of anything that could contribute to the heat island.
But Tuscan says the good news is just in the last few years, she's actually started to see this issue get more attention. So urban developers are starting to look more into cool pavements that are maybe lighter, don't absorb as much sunlight, and the importance of mature tree canopy and things like that.
Trees, of course, that were once here but no longer here. Ah, there goes the Expo line over there. So the trees and the lack of them here now making it hotter in Santa Monica and in other places as well. But also, if you remember, Kaylee, the last heat wave earlier this month, that's not the only problem. We also had higher humidity levels.
Oh my gosh, no kidding, I remember that. And we can't blame the apartment building for that problem. But this growing humidity isn't unique to Southern California, but it is especially noticeable in Southern California because we used to have a drier climate here. So to understand that better, I turn to Guang Zhang. He's a meteorologist at UCSD, and he can tell you just how much worse that humidity feels.
Over the past 25 years, say in LA, for example, the temperature increase was about half a degree. But if you include the humidity effect, it is more like 2 degrees.
He is a scientist, so he is talking in Celsius, but let me convert some of those numbers. He says the temperature here has gone up about a full degree Fahrenheit, but when you account for humidity, it feels more like 4 degrees.
Wow. So a full degree Fahrenheit over 25 years, it feels like 4 degrees hotter with the humidity. Why is it more humid, Kaylee? We live in California because we don't like humidity, right?
There's actually two reasons for that. One, the ocean is getting hotter. So as it gets hotter, it evaporates more of its water. And the other problem is, as the air gets hotter, it is able to hold more of that water.
Oh, all right. So it's hotter and it's more humid. But Santa Monica is always more humid at night because of the marine layer, right? We see the clouds roll in at night, and then it takes a long time for them to roll on out or to burn off. Those low clouds, well, sometimes they can even last all day. Other times they clear up in the afternoon. Is that changing as well? Are we seeing a change to the marine layer? And that's the question.
It actually is. But if we're going to keep talking about that, I think we need to head to our next stop to actually see some of that marine layer, or lack thereof.
All right, let's go. All right, so here we are, a little ways down at lifeguard station number 20, by the way, right along the beach. I see the pier, the Santa Monica Pier, and the roller coaster and the Ferris wheel.
Ferris wheel's moving, yeah.
Yeah, to the north. I see Venice Beach to the south over there, and a beautiful surf right now. Kaylee, here we are at the beach. It's later in the day. I'm not seeing much marine layer. It's pretty much clear.
And that's pretty normal, especially in the afternoon, especially in September. It generally comes back at night, though, and while that might be the bane of beachgoers and surfers trying to get out here early in the morning, it's also LA's air conditioner. And that's why a lot of older West Side homes don't actually have their own air conditioning. They didn't need it. But here's the scary part. This clear view that you're getting now is more common earlier in the day and earlier in the year than it used to be because our marine layer is disappearing.
Wait, say that again. The marine layer is disappearing.
Disappearing.
Like, all right, so we have fewer days with marine fog, or it doesn't stick around in the mornings as long as we're used to. I mean, how does that work? What do you mean it's disappearing?
Both. So it is disappearing earlier in the day, and we don't have as many days as we used to. Let me introduce you to UCLA geography professor Park Williams, who specifically studies our marine layer.
Since before the 1970s, summertime clouds in Los Angeles have been rising. That is, the base of the cloud is getting further away from the ground. But the tops of the clouds aren't rising. And that means the clouds are getting thinner and they're burning off earlier in the day. And so across a lot of LA over the last 50 years, the actual number of hours per day when there are low clouds during the summertime has been cut in about half.
So to put that in scary numbers, his research says here in Santa Monica, the average summer day in the 70s was cloudy for about 4 hours, and these days it's cloudy for about 2 hours.
Which is cut in half.
Yeah.
So is it going to go away completely? Are we just going to lose the marine layer altogether?
Hopefully not. Not necessarily. As the climate heats up, it'll keep going away, but we've got a long way to go before it goes away entirely. And if we stay on track, cutting our carbon emissions, we might never reach that point, hopefully. But even just a couple fewer hours of clouds is already making a difference in our temperature here, and not in a good way. William says it's made it quite a bit warmer than it used to be.
So if we remove clouds entirely, then a good estimate would be that just from that alone, we'd get a 5 degree Fahrenheit warming. But at a place like Santa Monica, where we've cut the cloud cover almost, or the number of cloudy hours per day almost in half, this has caused about a 2 degree Fahrenheit warming.
And that 2 degrees is on top of everything else we've done to change the climate. But before we get too doom and gloom, clouds disappearing isn't all bad news. I actually think you're going to like the final change to our air that I'm going to tell you about. So let's go ahead and head to our next stop.
Wait,
and talk about that.
We have to leave here?
I know. I'm sorry. It's
all
so
right,
pretty.
Let's go. All right, here we are back on Lincoln Boulevard, Kaylee, and now we're standing at Olympic and Lincoln right next to the 10 freeway. So we see the cars zipping past and forth, and I would imagine you brought us here to talk about air pollution,
right? Of course. Yes. What better way to talk about that than cars?
I mean, and it seems like every year LA is listed as one of the most or the most polluted city in the country. We get shamed about car culture and the freeways and the nightmarish rush hour traffic. I can only imagine the air pollution part of this report is going to be pretty depressing.
Okay, but you know what? It's actually not. I've got good news for
you. Okay, all right.
The traffic might be worse, but the air we're breathing today in LA is much cleaner than it used to be. Air pollution's actually been dropping steadily since it peaked in the 40s, and that's thanks to everything from requiring catalytic converters for new cars almost 5 decades ago to adding electric scooters almost 5 years ago. Actually, here in Santa Monica is where that started. Ed Aval is a USC professor of clinical preventative medicine, and he's been studying the effects of air pollution on children for 30 years now.
I grew up in Los Angeles. So for me, it's not a 30-year story. It's a 60-year story. And, you know, I remember going to school here when it was so smoggy. Some days they wouldn't let us out to play on the playgrounds. And so those days mostly are gone now. And so that really is a success story.
Still, not historically, but even recently, the air is getting cleaner. We're talking about noticeable drops every year because of more people driving EVs and using solar power and wind power. Between 2017 and 2018, air pollution dropped 10%, and then the next year, it dropped another 12%.
That is great news.
Well, it is, but there's also bad news that comes with it.
Of course.
Because you'll notice I only gave you numbers up till 2019.
And?
Well, you'll remember that three of our worst wildfire years on record happened in the past 5 years.
Of course.
And wildfires make smoke. Aval says pollution levels have actually started to creep back up in the past few years, thanks in part to our wildfires. Research from Stanford University that actually came out just last week says smoke has undone decades of progress from the Clean Air Act, but we are still leaps and bounds ahead of where we were 70 years ago.
Kids are growing up with better respiratory health than they did 10 or 20 years ago. I mean, so there is documentable evidence that things are getting better, but we are still in violation under the Clean Air Act of what the national and the state standards are set at to protect the public's health.
So that was a recent, but hopefully a short U-turn in our air pollution progress.
Okay, all right. So let's then put it all together, Kaylee. It is hotter, it is more humid, but the air is cleaner? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. So we've made progress on causing respiratory illnesses, but we need to be more careful about causing heat-related illnesses now.
And alas, climate change, right? Which is a lot of what we're seeing.
Continuing to change.
Right. All right, KCRW's Kaylee Wells. Kaylee, always nice to have you out on the streets of Santa Monica.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
Straight ahead, change is coming to the broadcast booth. A longtime fixture with the Dodgers is calling it a career, a very long, distinguished career. The life and times of Jaime Jarin, who wraps it up this season, coming up after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. And now a word about place. Coming to a new country and finding your place.
I noticed that there's a huge, huge Spanish-speaking people here in Southern California. I said, that's the place where I should go. But I was lost when I got here. I remember trying to take a taxi cab. And I used to have a dictionary with me. So I come to the driver and said, is this taxi free? Being available? He said, what do you mean free? I was so scared.
That was Jaime Jarin talking to HBO a few years back about getting to where he needed to be in Los Angeles, where he found his way to a booth with a microphone and for 64 seasons has been the Spanish language broadcaster for the LA Dodgers since the year after they came from Brooklyn. He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's in the Dodgers Ring of Honor. He is retiring at the end of this season, a season we, fingers crossed, hope will go all the way. And this weekend, the Dodgers hold a celebration at the stadium, honoring Jaime Jarin, many years with the team. Welcome back, sir. And thank you for coming back to Greater LA.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
That story about the taxi, when that was on HBO, by the way. You were talking to Bryant Gumbel. When did you come to the States from Ecuador? And tell us a little bit more about what that move was like for you when you were so much younger.
Yes, it was 1955. I was 19 years old. I came alone because I was married for almost 2 years. and I had one son, but it was difficult to come the whole family at the same time because I came here without any promise of work, without knowing anybody. So I told my wife, I'm going to go ahead of you, but wait for me. So I arrived here in 1955 on June 24th, the same day that Sandy Koufax pitched his first game in the major leagues. So baseball is telling me something there. So I arrived 1955 in June, and my wife and my son Jorge joined me in December the same year. So I have been here, and I chose Southern California because at the beginning I was thinking of going to New York or probably Chicago, but then I start reading about how huge the Spanish-speaking people colony here in Southern California. So I thought that's the place I should go. And that's a great, great decision that I took coming to Southern California because, you know, I feel great here and I have my home here. It has been beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
And you found your way to baseball, but it wasn't that easy at the beginning, right? You didn't know much about baseball, did you?
Yes, I didn't know nothing about baseball because baseball is not being played in Ecuador. They play soccer a lot. And when I came to these countries, when I started grasping the game, I used to go on weekends to watch the two AAA teams that we had in Los Angeles, the Hollywood Stars that used to play at the Gilmore Field and the Los Angeles Angels. I mean, Los Angeles that used to play at the Wrigley Field, a replica of the Wrigley Field in Chicago. The Wrigley Field in Los Angeles was in the South Central Los Angeles on Avalon and 42 streets. So I used to go there to watch baseball, to grasp the game and to learn about the game without knowing that eventually the Dodgers will move from Brooklyn to Los Angeles.
How do you feel about all this adulation? People who are celebrating you now that you're retiring after doing this for so many years?
Well, I feel overwhelmed, really. I feel overwhelmed about all the attention and all the love that people have shown to me. I have to thank so many people, but I think I will mention first the Dodgers because they are the ones that gave me the opportunity to be on the air, and they have supported me a lot. So I have to thank the Dodgers because they were the first Major League Baseball club to give the fans a bilingual coverage of the games because so many Spanish-speaking people are here in Southern California. So has been a dream to me. It has been a great, great ride, 64 years. I could continue because I feel physically well, mentally well, but I think it's time for me to change priorities, to do something else, to be more, you know, more time with my sons and my daughter-in-law and to work on the foundation that we have on behalf of my wife.
Well, tell us about the foundation that you have.
Yes, about, I think it was about a year before the pandemic hit Southern California and the country, my two sons decided that we should perpetuate the name of my wife. She was a very, very generous person, a beautiful person who wanted to, she was worried about so many kids that they don't have the means to proceed the education and go to universities. So they thought that they showed that we should found a foundation. They asked me if I was in accordance with that plan. I said, go ahead and let's do it. So we started the foundation with the support of the Defensores. And that's how we started. But then the pandemic hit us, and we couldn't do much about because of the pandemic. But it's a beautiful cause. We are going to give away probably 15 more scholarships in the next 2 weeks. We already did last year one. We gave 15 scholarships, 5,000 each one, and we reached an agreement with the California State Universities, so they're going to match our scholarship. So if I give $10,000, it will be $20,000. So that's a great, great project that we have in mind.
What do you think about everything happening for you on Saturday at Dodger Stadium? I know there's going to be a pin, right? And they're going to celebrate you. at the stadium itself with the fans, 50,000 people in the stands who love you so much.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to react. I know I'm going to be nervous. I don't know if I will be able to avoid crying. I don't really know. Now I am feeling okay. Two nights ago, I was honored by the San Diego Padres in San Diego. That was a very beautiful gesture by the Padres to honor me, since, you know, we are in the enemy territory. But they were very nice. So I came back, and I am looking forward to Sunday night. I know it's going to be very special, especially for my wife, for my family, and for myself, of course. But everything that I do is for my family. And also, I have to mention my beautiful little country, Ecuador, where I come from, because I love that country. And I will never forget that I started my career in Quito when I was 16 years old. I got my first job on radio. So I have been on radio 71 years without any intermission. That's amazing.
What do you think about the Dodgers' chances? They've won... Well, they just won 107, right? A team record, franchise record for wins. Are they going all the way this year?
Yes, they are going to win a couple of more games in this regular season. Then we go to the postseason. That's a different animal. But I think the Dodgers have a great ball club, and I think they're going to go all the way. I hope so. Because, you know, when I came to the Dodgers, in my first year, they won the World Series. 1959, they beat the White Sox. So it will be great if I finish my career with another World Series. Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Are you going to be calling the games through the rest of the season, even into the playoffs?
Yes, I'll be calling. You know, this year I didn't travel with the team, but they asked me to travel in the postseason. So I will be with the team and during the postseason, the playoffs, then I hope the World Series. Yes.
And you're going to rest for a little while after that, right? If they win at all, yeah. then it's maybe sleep a little more, huh?
Yes. Then I just signed a new two-year contract with the Dodgers to be with the organization, not as a broadcaster, but as an ambassador, especially, I will say, to the Latino community. So I'm going to be with the Dodgers for a couple of more years, you know, going to banquets, going to special clubs, organizations, and things like that.
That's wonderful to know. Jaime Jarin, a remarkable career as the Spanish language voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Jaime, congratulations to you. We honor you for so many years with the team and for a wonderful career. Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Very kind of you. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Next week, a machine at Biona Creek that'll filter out all the plastic before it reaches the sea. How big a difference will that make to the health of the Santa Monica Bay? Plus, a visit to the annual reenactment of a U.S. versus Mexico battle that took place in the South Bay in 1846, way back when. That's next week on GLA. Check us out anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're feeling, and of course, subscribe to the podcast too. And you can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Guy, Sue Margulies, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Vogel, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your ears. Have a great night.